The expressed views of the guests on this podcast are theirs alone and not necessarily endorsed by the host, TWBC, or any associated sponsor. Conversations that are robust yet balanced, on point and to the point. You're listening to The Talk of Tournament Water Ski. This is the TWBC Podcast. And now, here's your host, Tony Lightfoot.
All right, greetings one and all, and this is episode 171 of the TWBC podcast. My name is Tony Lightfoot, and I'm glad to have the pleasure of your company. And here in San Gervasio Bresciacano, in the north and middle part of Italy. If you wanted to look at it on a map, it's somewhere south of Brescia, some ways north of the historic city of Cremona. And in amongst all of this, we got the San Gervasio Pro, the 10th edition of which, and one of the good folks that has been behind the tournament since its inception is sitting with me now. This is Matteo Lizzeri. How are you doing, sir?
Tony, I'm doing very well. Thank you for coming back. I'm obviously very excited for this 10th edition. Yeah, let's talk it up. Let's see what comes out.
All right, then, absolutely. And excited for this competition for a number of reasons, not necessarily related to the actual event itself, but for you personally, because around about this time last year, or a little bit later than this time last year, you got into some difficulties, haven't you?
Yeah, so we had the 9th edition middle of July of last year, and then 2 weeks later we organized the European Championships here, and which was another set of challenges, somewhat similar, somewhat different than a pro tournament.
Uh-huh.
And so basically in the final of the event I broke my Achilles, and we recorded an episode about it last year. You were kind enough to call me right after.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I broke my Achilles. I was out for longer than expected because forecasted time was about 6 months. Mm-hmm. I had broken my Achilles 10 years ago, the other foot, and it took about 6 months. This time it took almost 10.
Okay, so what was the reason for the extended layoff?
So the assumption is that my Achilles wasn't fully healthy before I broke it. So basically within 6 months the MRI showed that the majority of the Achilles was healed, but there were parts of it, like marginal parts and some more deep, that hadn't fully healed.
So like some of the tendons weren't fully healed from all of the stresses that you put on it on regular slalom skiing, so it was pretty compromised already, and that probably led to the actual Achilles tendon tear the time that you did it.
Correct. That seems to be what has happened. And then I was in a bit of a limbo for a couple of months because I was feeling great at the 6 months mark. I was in Thailand coaching for the winter, and I even tried to ski, and there was no pain, no problem. And so I was very hopeful and came back middle of February back to Italy, and the MRI showed these undesired results. So then I was told to rest. Well, actually, I was told that I could start skiing, but I had to be careful not to fall, which you can imagine what that means. And so I said, no, I'm not going to do it. And then I did an MRI another month and a half later, and still the same. Like, those bits weren't healing as they should have. And the turning point was PRP. Basically, PRP is a procedure where they extract your own blood and extract the plasma out of your own blood and then inject it in a tissue that is struggling to heal.
So is that anything similar to stem cell?
Well, it can be done with stem cells as well. Mine was just my own blood. I was hesitant, despite the fact that Dr. Benassa, you know him, the doctor of our national team, recommended it earlier. But I kept hearing like discordant opinions about this until I finally decided to do it. And 2 weeks later, my MRI was super clean. So that therapy really did wonders for me. And so then I started skiing May 2nd.
You started skiing May 2nd, okay, and we're now on July the 4th, you know, an important day for me where I come from, but for a totally different reason, which I will not bore you. Yes, I won't bore you with, and I thank you for mentioning that, Matteo. But so you had a clean bill of health so far as the MRI was concerned, enough for you to ski on the 2nd of May. What was that like, getting back out on the water?
Well, it was even more joyful than when I broke it 10 years ago, right?
Okay.
It had been longer time. 10 years ago, it was a fairly straightforward recovery. PT is always hard, but there weren't any hurdles. You know, I basically carried on, and then I was told that I could ski, and I skied, and it was great. But this time it was even sweeter after the, you know, that period where at the gym I was doing everything. I felt strong, but I wasn't ready to ski yet. So first set felt great. And what I was really looking forward to was the what you do after a pass if you're a kicker user, to take your foot out when you drop and you feel the water under your back foot. That was the first thing I
Without
wanted to do.
Without feeling any pain or any discomfort at
no,
all?
No, just that feeling of, you know, you're dropping at the end of the lake, you kick the foot out of the kicker and you put it down. Because I wasn't using a kicker for the last 5 years. And I made the decision the day that I got injured on July the 30th that I was going to go back on a kicker.
And yeah, that
one of the things that I missed was really that sort of like free foot touching the water as you sink at the end of the lake.
Or being able to rock up on the front of the ski if you wanted to.
That I missed, or at least I thought I did, until, you know, and this is an ongoing process, I'm now getting used to the kicker. And I'm nowhere ready to competitive form, or at least the one that I've been able to show even up until last year. But I want to ski the Pro-Am. I'm the only skier that has skied all 10 editions.
Okay.
All 9. And I said, okay, I'm not ready for it, but I want to ski, you know.
Okay, so how ready would you say on the percentage scale are you ready?
Probably 80%, 70%, you know. No. I ran, so the approach was, I did 12 sets of free skiing, cut and coast, free skiing, and then I started skiing the course at 55K, 13 meters. And then every 3 sets, I upped the speed 0.2.
Okay.
Because during the free skiing sets, I was skiing at 55. And then I asked Gennady, I said, hey, pull me at 58 just for some cuts. And I got scared.
Wow.
I got reminded of how fast and intense 58K is. So I'm like, okay. And also with the kicker, I couldn't turn a single turn at 58. No. So I said, okay, well then... This is going to have to be very progressive.
Okay, let's pump the brakes on this for a little while and get back into actual technically.
And so, I did every 3 sets, nor 0.2 kilometers an hour, and I got to a full 58 4 sets ago. So I've had 4 sets, including today's familiarization, that was 16.08, you know?
Excellent, excellent. So 80% there. So you've... This is your first tournament of the season, yep. Is that right? So I mean, you've seen some of the other tournament, the action so far as this season, and there's someone who is very closely aligned to what happens on the Water Ski Pro Tour. How do you reckon it's gone so far?
Well, I think the level of competition has gone up even more. Like I thought last year. That we broke new barriers. I mean, I would have to give you more precise statistics, but there have been tournaments where people skiing 3 at 41 didn't make the finals.
Yeah.
Like, I remember for a fact, Monaco, probably...
You struggle to get into the finals day of skiing here at San Gervasio with anything around 2.5 or 3.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I hope so. That means that this weekend will probably be a high-level competition. But
of course.
In general... You know, that we are at a stage in pro men skiing where you have to back up a 3 at 41 with a good score. If you don't...
It's that backup score, yeah.
If you don't, you might be out of the final, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, no, the level, and he showed again this year. He showed again this year. And in the final stages now, seems like that 4:41 might not be enough.
Mm-hmm.
So, no, the level clearly increased. But what I'm especially proud is, you remember when we started this in 2014. You guys started,
yeah,
I think, webcasting in 15 or 16.
I think it was 16.
16.
Yeah.
We were the only tournament in Europe. And I kept saying, like, someone else will do it. Someone else will do it. Now we are July 4th, and this is the fifth tournament in Europe.
Yeah.
It's the third of the Water Ski Pro Tour.
It's the fifth tournament in the space of 3 weeks.
It's, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I would have never said in 2016. I was hoping for it.
Yeah.
But now it's a reality. Like, skiers that are based in the U.S. can come here and within the span of 3 weeks, 3.5 weeks, do a lot of competitive events. And from some of the feedback that I received from skiers that have come on site so far, they seem to be the preferred events. Like, seems to be the events where, you know, at least from the athlete standpoint, the athlete feels honored, respected, well-treated, mm-hmm. and the event is about them. Because really, that's what it is. It's about the skiers.
Yeah, indeed. You know, and I mean, the feedback that I'm getting from skiers has been mainly positive. I mean, starting with the event in Morocco, I mean, you probably saw that, didn't you?
I saw it on the webcast, on the social media, and obviously I wished I was there, you know.
Of course.
It looked like a fantastic event. Athletes were very well treated, you know. That's mm-hmm. that's always good to see. Here we try our best to do to live to that expectation, right?
Yeah.
Obviously, on the technical side, from swimming in to make the course just perfect last night at 10 p.m. to ropes, and also I think Tony is the personal touch, right? Like how you welcome people, how you make sure that you can help them as much as possible within the constraints of organizing an event.
Yeah.
Restaurant recommendations, whatever it is, you know, like to help them make sure that they feel welcomed and well treated.
And I mean every time I'm asked about the event, this one, there are basically two words that comes to mind really when it comes to promoting this event, and it's La Campagnoli, just down the road.
I told
nothing
you this.
Nothing to do with the skiing, just La Campagnoli.
Yeah, well, we'll be there tomorrow night. And you'll see, there'll be a couple of new things this year, but... I mean, in 2020, this is the 10th edition, but in 2020 we couldn't host due to the COVID.
Of course.
And when we had to cancel, all the skiers were mentioning was, oh man, we will miss Le Campagnole, which is this farm restaurant nearby where we present the bibs to the pro skiers on Friday evening. And in a way, I was a little hurt as an organizer. I'm like, yeah. Is that what you're missing, the restaurant? You know? But it's part of our tradition now. You know?
Indeed.
Look, I think you've been around for a while as well.
Yeah.
And you know that there's not many tournaments that made it to 10th editions.
No, not at all.
Because objectively, it's hard. You know, it's hard to carry on going.
Hard to get the sponsorship, you know, and just getting out into the community and stuff, and Gladhaden and politicians and what have you.
There's so many variables, you know.
You know. And then getting the officials, you know, because I mean, there have been tournaments that have been starved of officials, especially scorers.
Yeah. I mean, scorers is scorers, homologators, judges. I mean, I've recently become an official.
Okay, nice.
J2 in slalom and jump last year because I didn't pass the trick. But now this year I took the trick and passed it again. And I had my first experience as an official 2 weeks ago at the overall tournament here. And I don't think there's anything like being on the tower, being in the boat, to understand how challenging that is, you know. So my utmost respect to officials, even more so now that I had my little experience of being an official.
Yeah, I mean, I had a little... Well, I've never been an official. I mean, aside from what I do on the microphone, of course, I don't know whether you call that in any way, shape, or form of officiating. But I did have the opportunity last season, or rather earlier this season, with Donnell Conley, you know, with the
yeah,
splash eye trick,
of course.
You know, and looked into that, you know, and you know, it's, things are changing within the sport, you know, and I mean, there are officials that have been around for a while, you know, that have come to embrace some of the technology, and some of those are a little bit resistant to it, you know.
Yeah.
But you know, I feel optimistic going forward for our sport, especially in the pro ranks, and especially the Water Ski Pro Tour with the events that are coming up. You know, I mean, I can't reveal too much, neither can you, but I mean, there are some possible events on the horizon, you know, beginning next year, you know, that would be inconceivable years ago.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I mean, just to come back to what we said a few minutes ago, 8 years ago, not that long ago, it would be inconceivable to have 6 events in Europe in a span of 3-4 weeks, right? And that's just like half of the tour now, you know? So there's a lot of opportunities for obviously the best in the world, but also this tournament initiated, if I can use that term, a lot of skiers that then ended up being pros, whether because they skied in the pros here as their first pro tournament, or now, thanks to the Junior Challenge, we have skiers that are skiing in the professional ranks now.
Yeah.
And I've always upheld that about the San Gervasio Prime. Like, we have a score that if you've skied that score in a tournament, you can sign up as a pro. And I always encourage the skiers to do so, to get a first experience of being on the dock with the best in the world.
You know, where better to do it than in the northern part of Italy, you know?
Right.
I mean, one of the most beautiful countries on God's green earth, you know?
Yeah, I mean, as you know, I moved back here 4 years ago, and I've been very happy with my decision. I even rediscovered, because I'm about an hour away from here originally, but I rediscovered the area of the country where I'm from. My sister and I do, like, some clinics where we bring people to check around the area. I am as excited as our guests to go to Bergamo or Mantova or Lake Garda, Lake Iseo, where I'm from originally.
Mm-hmm.
It's a beautiful part of the country.
Indeed, indeed. And you did spend quite a bit of your time, not recently, but years ago. I mean, you skied for the Raging Cajuns of Louisiana Lafayette, and then you graduated from there, and then you went to Florida State University over in Tallahassee. A big shout out to Keith Albritton, who I'm sure is listening to this quite intently, you know, and you gained your doctorate in sports psychology. Now, I probably asked you this in a podcast or in a conversation, you know, in recent times, you know, but Italy is going to host the Winter Olympic Games in a couple of years. You're smiling, and you're probably anticipating this question. Are you going to be involved in some ways, given where your professional expertise lies?
Most likely, no. I have opened a private practice in sports psychology, but I do keep it very, very, very part-time.
Uh-huh.
It is clear to me that I moved back for Jolly Ski. We have big plans ahead, which probably we will reveal tomorrow evening at the beef ceremony, which involve basically scaling up the ski school even more. And that's my main focus. So I do, especially in the winter time, I accept a few more athletes for individual consultation.
Mm-hmm.
But being involved with any of the national team in Milano Cortina would be too big of a commitment for the way my life is shaping right now.
Okay, but you keep that door open just in case.
Sure.
Absolutely.
For sure.
Now you mentioned that you've consulted and you've also coached. I mean, Florian Paf is one of this venue's success stories, with his jumping at the Masters and collegiate level as well, and he's taken a back seat in trick skiing and trying to up his game in slalom, you know. So what do you have to say about him?
Florian turned out to be a little brother to me. Basically, since I moved back, when I moved back from the US, he started living with me. So he was living with me a lot, especially during those COVID days where they were doing homeschool. Or mm-hmm. Online school.
Yeah.
So he would just live with me here in San Gervasio, and we skied a lot together. Yes, despite Claudio is his coach. But all the out of the water, out of the boat side of coaching, so at the house, the conversations when things get hard, mentorship really, which I think is part of coaching. That was me, you know. And then I brought him to the Junior Masters not too long ago, because the second one was 2 years ago.
Yeah.
And then he went back this year to the Pro Masters and ended up on the podium, which is really like a super big success story.
He wasn't even initially on the list in the MLCQ.
Well, that's more due to his ever-growing organizational competencies, you know, which are not very high.
Collegiate skiing does that to you, I guess.
Collegiate skiing, maybe me helping him a bit too much in his junior years, but, you know, like, eventually he was in. The big success story is how quickly he adapted to 6 foot. That's really what it is. Like, he started jumping 6 foot 2 weeks before.
He spoke of very little else.
You know, and he adapted surprisingly quickly as the LCQ and then the Masters showed.
Now, given how quickly he adapted from 5.5 to 6 foot, do you kind of figure, well, maybe I should have left him off the leash a little bit with 6 foot a little sooner, and maybe it'd be a little bit further down the line, or maybe is it the reason why he's this far down the line is because you've kind of like pumped the brakes a little bit on
probably
6 foot.
The latter. What I'm discovering both as a coach and also as a sports psychologist, because the vast majority of water skiers I worked with were jumpers. I think is by far the most mental discipline of the three. It's two movements in jump, but you have to do them all the time despite anything. Yeah. If you look at the jumpers, I think they're distributed in a U curve, right? So you have a lot of jumpers that are afraid.
Okay, fearful.
Fearful. You have a lot of jumpers who are too daring, a bit, you know, reckless.
Disrespectful.
Disrespectful, yeah. And then you have that small number of jumpers who have high technical ability, and they dare within their own technical ability. And that's when you get the Dodds, the Krugers of this world. Florian always struck me as being that, even from a young age.
Oh, wow.
He would always risk within his own means. And, of course, sometimes he would want more, and that's when you have to rein back. But really, if I had to say, the main has always been ramp work for him. And I know that Jay had a little bit of influence on that since Flo moved back.
Uh-huh.
And we reined him back until he said, okay, probably now it's time to go. And that worked perfectly.
All right, then. So as we slowly get ready and prepared for the 10th edition of the San Gervasio Pro-Am, one person who I need to ask you about, he wasn't here last season. He was trying to recuperate. Was it last season or the season before, your father?
2 years ago.
Two years ago.
Yeah.
I mean, that must have been pretty scary right there, huh?
That was very scary. It was hard to organize that 8th edition knowing that dad was in the hospital. But he recuperated, I would say, basically fully for regular life and almost fully for skiing. I think one of the residues that is still there is a slow response time. Like, things, you can tell he tries to do a movement on the water, which is very reaction time based sport, and then he's just that little bit delayed. But no, he's here. He's gonna be here. The second he arrived, I put him on some job. You know?
Okay,
but no, he's gonna be here. He'll enjoy the event as always.
Excellent. And this will bring to a conclusion the 171st episode of the TWBC podcast. Anything you want to say in closing?
Yes. Thank you, Tony. Thank you, Vino. Thank you to the whole TWBC crew, which, as you know, includes also my sister, despite primarily on a remote base, for what you're doing and for what you have done about to this event. Like, if this event is an event that is so well respected and historical, is also thanks to you guys.
Excellent stuff. And yes, this is the concluding part of the latest edition of the TWBC podcast. My name is Tony Lightfoot. And until next time, it is ciao for now.
Thank you for listening to the TWBC podcast. Be sure to check out our website at waterskibroadcasting.com. Links to our presence on major social media platforms can be found there, as well as updates to our webcast and this podcast. Duplication or rebroadcasting of this broadcast without written consent of TWBC is prohibited. Subscribe to us on your favorite podcast platform and be sure to join us next time for the next edition of the TWBC podcast.